Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures, episode 3 for the San Diego International Film Festival. Today we will be talking with director Savannah Block. I hope I pronounced that right. We have her press kit here that we'll go through a little bit. She's going to tell us some info because why read a press kit when you have the director online with you? I'm excited about today's film because before I introduce Savannah, I'm really jazzed about today's film because San Diego is like my favorite place on the planet. It's probably where I would have my last meal if I was being put to death. That sounded dumb, but anyways. And this film is shot all around San Diego, so if you like San Diego, you'll see some of your favorite spots. And also, this film is unique because, as we know, most films are now not even shot in California. So, let's see. Are you with us, Savannah?
Yes, I am. Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for joining us. I wanted to make sure I got your last name right. What was your last name?
Block.
Okay, cool. That's what I said. I wasn't sure. All right, so first thing is, congratulations on the picking up the jury award at the LA Film Festival. How was that? Thank you.
It was amazing. It was very unexpected, but I felt I was over the moon. I couldn't believe it.
I know that festival, and then we'll go right into the log line. I know that festival, just from a press point of view, it's very interesting because it's even like, how can I put this? I could only imagine how much they put the filmmakers through, because like with the press, they're hard to get into. And I know press where it's like after 5 years, they just give up on even applying because it's like, you know, if 10,000 readers a week isn't enough, then. So I always hear about these great films there, and so to win it, yeah, that's a huge honor. But let's start out with, I let the audience know I had your press kit, but I know Sarah does a fantastic job, but we'll let you tell us the synopsis.
I'm not great with synopsis, but basically it's about woman, Alyssa, who is a photographer, who wakes up one morning and her husband has gone missing, and it just turns her whole world upside down. And so she reaches out to who she thinks is his colleague, a jazz pianist, Eve. And Eve sort of helps guide her through dealing with his absence and what happened with him, and sort of starts to fall in love again and form this bond with this new person. Through her grief.
That to me was the best part of your directing was it was almost like you sat down. I mean, did you consciously sit down and say, okay, these are the 10 heaviest emotions, and so I'm going to pick 4 of them and then try to deal with them? Like, did it just come out of the writing? I mean, it was as ambitious as some huge action film, but it was just people living life. So how did that go for you?
It was certainly ambitious in that it did tackle a lot at once. I was most interested in exploring sort of what love is and, you know, how that can manifest itself. People think of romantic love, and is there all these other types of love? I was also interested in sort of what it means to be a woman and different types of relationships. And then, you know, I think grief is pretty universal, and love and grief kind of go together in that you, at some point, you lose if you love wholly. At least for me, I was always worried about losing a part of myself. And so a lot of the film deals with identity, both your individual identity and your relationship identity. And like, how much does one make up the other?
Okay. Cause what I was kind of going through with your film, I love when people say that a film they see has nothing to do with them. It's like they love Fast and the Furious and they love cars and they think there's no connection. So, I mean, of course, after a moment, I was like, okay, I'm not just going to like this because it's San Diego. But it brought up some things that I was thinking of about love, of how we kind of, we categorize love when it's kind of like, to me, your favorite band, your best friend, your best female friend, maybe you were in love once and had a long relationship. They can all be loved and not partake in or be more than the other. And I heard a great saying where someone said, one of the best things for having a fruitful life is to just fall in love with something, even if it's just that you love your coffee every day. And So it doesn't have to be go get a girlfriend, go get a husband, just totally love sitting with your coffee. And I thought, that's really interesting because a lot of people, like you said, love can seep into your identity. Love can seep into who you are. Are you receiving enough? Are you giving too much to the person you're with and they're not giving it back? And it just becomes a cluster F word. And I think that's what was great about your characters was that at any given moment, and I would love to know the challenge of this as a director, because I don't believe this stuff goes on in the editing, is the balancing of the specific emotions for each character. Like you have to get emotion A, and maybe they're giving you emotion B. So what was that challenge like?
You know, it was definitely a challenge. You know, what exactly you're saying was definitely the biggest challenge was sort of dealing with each character's emotions separately. So, you know, we've got Eve and we've got Alyssa in majority of the scenes in the film together, but they're on completely separate journeys. And so I think what I had to do was really work with each actor individually, especially since we shot so out of order. Like, we had their entire emotional journey from start to finish pretty much outlined, which we worked in prep. But I did it separately with both Tanya and Rachel. And so we kind of had to pinpoint, okay, where are we in the emotional journey? You know, are we still at, like, all is lost, frantic, you know, Kevin is missing, and how much of Kevin is still there is kind of the thing that we always checked, like I always checked back in with Tanya about. We'd always be like, how much is Kevin here in the scene with her, and how much has she let him go? And so as far as the emotional journey, yeah, it was pretty mapped out. I mean, a lot of decisions were made beforehand, but Tanya, I think, has her own sort of experiences that she drew on to really make this feel like a lot about loss.
Okay, because this was very, I could tell, just having made films myself, that this was something where, I mean, it's obviously a A or B. You either go into personal stuff or you don't, and you could tell that there was a lot going on where it was like, okay, this director's great, this actress is great, but there's something that someone's not saying, or there's something that only the director and actress have discussed. And I'm always interested in what a director's feeling is about where they should draw that line. Like, if you know that such and such happened, or you sense such and such happened, do you think it's for them to tell you, or do you think you kind of pry a little bit if it will help the performance?
That's a great question. I think I definitely struggle with that just emotionally myself, to like use what I know I might want to need to use to get a performance to where it needs to go, especially if we're short on time. The way I think I dealt with it was a lot of pre-talking, like a lot of talking about stuff that's going on in each actor's lives individually, and then using it if I really needed to draw upon. But for the most part, you know, when you have such talented people, you don't need to kind of you can allow them to use what they need to get there, and you just need to kind of set the goalpost and tell them where they're at. And so a lot of the time, especially with this caliber of talent, I was able to sort of just guide them so that it was more about finding the relationship for me, but they were on their both individual journeys. The weird thing, though, is working with Tanya and Rachel are completely different because Tanya's very method, not totally method, but much more leaning that way. And Rachel comes from theater, so she turns it on and turns it off. So dealing with them in the challenge and journey.
Oh, okay. I mean, how, just a side sub question. What is that, and obviously it's nothing personal because it's just it's the way someone works, but is that as a director, and you can apply it to something else, is that kind of, because in all the projects I've been a part of, I've never gotten to deal with someone who does that, like Sean Penn in Fast Times, where people say, like, we didn't meet Sean until the rap party. Like those actors who are like, start the movie and they're the a-hole the whole movie, even the crew, because they have to stay in it, and then they're nice and can apologize to everyone. So do you think as a director, is that something, you know, other than schedule, logistics, the obvious, we got to make our day, what is that like as a director to kind of, maybe there was times where you just needed like 30 minutes of, okay, can you turn it off because I just have to talk to you about something? Like, how does that work for a director?
I know some directors who do get frustrated by it. For me, I work really well with it. Not that I'm like messed in my own directing, but I do like consider it a little bit. Like, I go so deep into that world that for me to have someone else who's there all the time too, and who I can kind of like watch and observe and watch sort of someone become naturally that character, I can see what's real and what feels authentic. For me, you can tell I really like psychological pieces. I like delving into the mind and sort of, not, I don't want to say manipulating, but it is a sort of manipulation. When you know someone is there, you can sort of move them. I don't know. For me, it works really, it works. It's definitely frustrating for other people on the crew. It's definitely frustrating for other people, I think, maybe even in the cast. But when you have someone who has to go through something like this emotionally, like every day she has to deal with the loss of her husband, and every day she has to like question her own, like she had to go through so much. I was so demanding that I felt, you know, appreciative of where that sort of that pain that she put herself in, and I just wanted to help her.
Okay. I mean, I like that, and that makes sense for I always wanted to know, because I was just a production assistant on a really known movie, and it was kind of funny because the lead actor was, you know, one of the most known actors in the world, and this little pipsqueak, like, first time being in a movie was just, like, totally being this, like, I didn't know, because obviously, like, you know, when you're creating a movie, you don't know what the film's about, but then when the movie came out, I was like, okay, that's why he was a little dickhead the whole time. And it was so funny because it was like, dude, you're 14 and you're trying to do the Brando De Niro method and you're working with the most famous actor in the world who can just be cool and hang out with the crew and watch basketball. Like, and it was just so funny to me. So I thought, one day I want to ask a director what this is like, because I just can imagine that the director of the film wanted to just smack this little punk and be like, look who you're working with, shut up. But that goes with the business, as you know.
You'd think that that would happen. I don't know. I definitely have a lot of conversations about this, especially with this film. And, you know, talking to people who don't have a high tolerance for that type of behavior. Trust me, Tanya was not, she was amazing. Like, that, she was not all the way method. She was not like that. As a director, like, you want the best for your film, and so does this other person, and they're giving you everything they have. So the director and the actors, I mean, at least for me, not for everybody, I'm sure you ask any director and they'll have their own opinion about it, but for me, she stayed in character. She wasn't being a diva. She wasn't asking for things as Tanya, she was just in that world the whole time, which is the most you can get out of your actor as a director.
Okay, no, that, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. That's what I thought you were saying. I see that to me is very interesting in how someone would stick in that and not get in, you know, if the grips make a funny joke or you're having a good day, but you have to still be having a bad day. That's, I think, it's not my quote. I take it from an interview I saw with Paul Thomas Anderson. They asked him about Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood, and he said all of his performance was his wizardry. I don't even want to know what he did. I asked him to do this. He did that. It worked. It's not for me to know. And I thought, what a great answer. Like, there's some times where it's really not for you to know. You're not the actor. And if it works, it works. A big question I had, since I saw you were USC alumni, and we'll just have a few more questions, is I know this, of course, there's hundreds of things you took from USC, but I'm always interested in this big film school debate that's going on. So since I saw you were an alumni, I would say, what would you say is something that there's just no way you could have done in this business without USC?
The people you meet at USC. I'm still friends with everybody. There's my network. They're my people. They're my go-to. They've got my back. Both my producers were USC on this film. I had just so many friends help, you know, from people coming one day just to lend a day or lend an expertise. Some, you know, we needed a few VFX shots. Like, I know people who are so talented and just of such a high caliber that I wouldn't have had any of this without USC. And it's straight from that, just the people I met.
I love that answer because every time I hear people talking about the film school thing, I say, unless you're, you know, specifically in a specific thing, like, duh, you need to know the computer for a visual effects or whatever. But I what you said, I was hoping that would be your answer because I'm like, it's always just the people because they're the ones who 15 years later will cut their day rate or will do some favor for you the night before that no one else on planet Earth would do. I love that you said that. I mean, our film school teacher told us the first day, don't impress any of us. We're not going to give you jobs. They said, look around the room. These are the only people that are going to hire you in your life. So when you're down and out. So thank you for saying that because I wanted to have a guest explain the importance of that. Let's see. Last question about the film before we just go into our standard show questions is, obviously, we talked off the phone about the locations, but this was, especially since you said you were shooting out of order, which is usually the case for those out there that don't know. What was the process like? Was this just you, or did you just have one hell of a location manager? I mean, how did this play into the story without being the technical aspect of, we can't shoot here, we can't shoot there. Like, what was that like for you, blending your home into such an important story?
Yeah, no, it was, you know, the journey of finding where we were going to shoot this was kind of a long one, but we adapted the script for a few different locations before I finally took it home to the place I know. The main reason why I wanted to shoot in San Diego or set it in San Diego is because San Diego is sort of this place that is really conservative but seems liberal. You know, you've got this surfer vibe. You've got people who are super laid back, but it's very conservative, I mean, especially in the mindset of the people who live there. And so I wanted to sort of put this story in that world as opposed to, you know, a San Francisco or somewhere that an LGBT story might take place more naturally. So that's sort of how the world became San Diego. Then the locations, you want to find the most beautiful places, and San Diego has a lot to offer. Someone with the film commission, Brandy, helped us so much. She read the script. She helped us find the most, you know, beautiful locations for nothing. I mean, you can shoot in San Diego without paying for any permits. And that's a huge plus to indie filmmakers that they don't know about. Yeah, you go to LA, it's like $800 a day. San Diego.
Yeah.
I mean, we shot in the middle of Balboa Park, you know, when it was we had millions of extras because everyone was just walking around. It was absolutely great place to shoot. I would shoot there again. We shot in the middle of Gaslamp. You know, it was probably the easiest days was those exteriors, just because, you know, we got so much on screen for very little, which is really helpful for independent films.
Oh yeah, I mean, no cost. I mean, I've never even heard of that. I mean, small towns off the 10 freeway in the middle of Arizona will charge you. That's quite I'm really surprised that that's not pushed more on. I mean, let's face it, the unions probably get in the way of that one, but we won't get into that. I would have never believed it because San Diego, of course, as you know, but for people, check out this film. Oh, again, before we go on, even though it says it on the screen for anyone that listens, let us know again when you're screening at San Diego.
Oh, yeah, we're screening at the Regal Cinemas in Horton Plaza on October 7th at 3:30 p.m. and at UTC La Jolla Arclight at 2:30 on October 8th. And there'll be a Q&A with both me, Colette, the co-writer, the producer, Jennifer Weberly, and both lead actresses.
Excellent. And just so you know, the people that listen to this show, the info is on that page. I just like to always say it because I get people who, you know, listen to something and don't read the page because I guess they just like surf the internet and listen. This was a really, I also liked that you didn't use San Diego as like, I know this location's awesome, so it's going to make, I wanted to just compliment you before I go into my last couple of questions, that you didn't cheapen anything. And I've said that to a lot of directors and they have said, why would I? But I think sometimes it can seep naturally into, okay, if I put Mulholland as the backdrop, or if I have these two talking on Mulholland and they just happen to see downtown LA and the 101, then, you know, it just happened to be there. So I really like that you didn't put anything just for no purpose or no reason to have. I mean, when I saw the Coronado Bridge, I thought, I didn't notice it for like 30 or 45 seconds. And I thought, you know, a lot of filmmakers would have started with like an exterior of the, establishing of the bridge and then panned down to her or something. So I wanted to compliment you on that. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, were you going to? Oh, you're welcome.
We didn't have any establishing shots in the film, for the most part.
You know what? I'll have to. Now you're gonna. I try so hard to watch these and turn off the, like I was saying, I think in the review or the preview, the how'd they shoot there and where did they put the grips and how did dolly tracks fit there? The streets open and. And now you're making me want to go back and see these no establishing shots. Kudos to you on that. Let's see. The last two questions that we have been ending every show with for the last 10 or 12 shows. As a director, you get the budget you need, the cast you need. Of course, the script works. What's the genre that you would just have to do?
Dark comedy.
Dark comedy. Okay. Do you have any one or two that you would lean towards as a, like an influence?
I love the movie Harold and Maude.
Oh, gosh. Good.
It's so great. It's one of my favorite movies. I think it's 1971 or 79. Is it late 70s?
Yeah.
Early 70s?
Yeah, no, it's early it's Hal Ashby's second movie. His Landlord was his first, so yeah, it's early 70s.
Yeah, that's definitely a big influence for me. I would love to do something in a a tone that is as unique as that one.
That, you know, just so everyone knows, if you haven't seen Harold and Maude, I hope that it's not one of those that's hard to find anymore. I actually got to see it on the big screen at a classic film night a few years back. I was so floored because you guys got to see Harold and Maude. I can't remember, the kid's like in his teens and he falls in love with a really older woman. So it's not like one of those, mm-hmm. yeah, cool, he got the 40-year-old. It's totally different. It's so unique. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves this film. This director, of course, is also known for The Last Detail, Coming Home, very Hal Ashby's a whole story for a whole nother time. Harold and Maude, great choice, wonderful director, one of the most successful of the 70s. The second question is just the reverse. Lights are off, you haven't eaten for a week, your car is going to be taken away. You get offered a project, everything works, but there's no way you're going to do that genre.
Let me think. Obviously, there's some things that are off the table in the I would say I'm trying to stray away from like Hallmark rom-com that are very generic that most people would assume women would direct.
Oh, I see. Those every holiday they have those movies, and just like She Lost Her Job and then meets the guy. And
yeah.
Right. Well, I want to commend you. I appreciate, because again, we're an uncensored show and I'm not being crude, but you're the second of like 10 people to not say porn like within 2 seconds. So
it was the first thing that came to mind, but I figured.
No, I probably. Right. No, so I thank you for giving me something else, because I was thinking if she says porn, I'm going to ax this question. I won't tell anyone. I'm just going to ax it from the list because I started getting the first five would say sci-fi and porn. So then I was like, come on, just someone give me something else. And then I started getting different answers. So thank you. That's good to know. Porn and Hallmark movies. Boy, talk about yin and yang. Well, you know, with that, again, we want to thank you for your time. We want to thank you for calling in, and we hope you have fantastic screenings. And then also in the future, we are, anyone who's ever on the show is welcome back. So you have our info and all that. So if you ever want to come back with a project that you do in the future or anything, we're open to that because we just consider everyone a cousin on the family tree. And we have lots of guests who have come back 3 or 4 or even 5 times. So,
well,
just know
I
that's
appreciate
an option.
That. This was great. I hope there is a second, third, fourth movie. That's all one thing.
Excellent.
Stage.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I really, really enjoyed your film, and we don't tell anyone anything they want to hear. So, again, kudos to you, and have a great, safe time in San Diego, and safe filming this week.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha. Bye.
All right, we always thank our guest, Savannah Block, for coming by for And Then There Was Eve, playing at the San Diego International Film Festival. Instead of me telling you when, look at your screen. The times are right there. Click out of whatever internet site you're surfing and go to the page and check out the times. Okay, I guess I will tell you because some of you might be too lazy to do that. October 7th, Regal Cinema, Horton Plaza at 3:30, and October 8th at the UTC La Jolla Arclight at 2:30. That's going to do it for us. Take care, have a great day, and aloha.